Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, or good exactly high noon, everyone, and welcome to the Yummy Wisdom Healing Happy Hour. This is your host, Maggie Spielpenning with Addie's Holistic Coaching. And today we're going to be looking at what I call the black holes of healing. And the black holes come when something is unforgivable. And it's either that you have done something unforgivable that you can't face in yourself, so you stuff it, you don't look at it, you let it go. And this causes a chain reaction where you'll stop participating with people, stop participating with groups, stop participating with organizations who remind you of the unforgivable thing. It's similar in practice to when someone has done something unforgivable to you, that you avoid that person. You avoid situations where that person or people like that person will be there. And again, it creates this empty, voided out space inside that then has to be filled with something. Something. And often the something is not healthy for us. So I actually want to veer a little bit and share a story with you that many of you have heard before, that I was raised Catholic. For many years, I billed myself as a recovering Catholic. And I can get a lot of juice for that one. There are people, I mean, of course, I get way more juice from other Catholics because all I have to say is recovering Catholic. And that just creates a picture, and it creates a bond, and it creates an understanding. And so there I was in the throes of being 35 years as a recovering Catholic. And I was at a conference. And one of the other participants at the conference was this truly forward-thinking and delightful man. His name was Father O'Rourke. And he was such an amazing, amazing person, just an amazing, loving human being. And one of the things he did that just made me fall in love with him and what he's up to out in the world is he asked his diocese if he could bring together people from different religions to dialogue, and they said, oh, sure, Father Jerry, you go right ahead, thinking he was going to get, you know, Methodists, Protestants, and such. And instead, he went out and found Sufis and Jews and Rastafarians and just every eclectic group you can think of to dialogue about what is God, what is spirituality, how do we connect. And it was just beautiful. And just seeing him and knowing that this is what he was up to in the world opened my heart in a way that my heart had not been opened. Like in being with Father Jerry, I could see what's possible in being Catholic. And I've just felt this very strong, strong yearning. And I went up to him and said, Father Jerry, would you be willing to hear my confession? And you've got to get, this guy is such, oh my God, just the cliche of the Catholic priest, you know, thick, heavy Irish accent, white hair, the collar, and all that stuff. And so he's just, just everything was so perfect. And I said, you know, Father Jerry, would you be willing to hear my confession? And he said, oh, of course, child, of course. I would love to do that. How long has it been? And I said, well, it's been 35 years. To which he said, oh, good Lord, I don't have that much time. And when I stopped laughing, he said, pick the worst one, the very worst one, and tell me that. And I confess to a time when my girls were little that I lost it with them. And I was so ashamed, and it was hard even to get the words out of my mouth. And Father Jerry heard my words, and he said, have you forgiven yourself for this? And I said, no. No, I haven't. I can't. And he said, and yet that's what our Lord teaches us, to forgive. To forgive, you know, 70 times 70. He said, and most important is to start with yourself. How can you claim to be openly and willingly able to forgive others if you're not willing to forgive yourself? And I still get so moved when the profoundness of that and the power of that hit me. I was able to forgive myself and mean it, not just, you know, say words, but actually mean it. And then Father Jerry, who's just the best, oh, Father O'Gork, you're amazing. He said, now go to that with the rest of them. And, oh, my God, how gorgeous was that? How gorgeous was that? It was just, oh, my goodness, beyond belief, such a joy. Such a joy, the freedom that came from that. And part of what happened when I forgave myself was I started to have room for my children to be who they are. Like, I think many of us as parents tend to view our parenting through the filter of, you know, if my child does something, ultimately I'm responsible. And that was the kind of stuff that was drilled into the women, especially of my parents' era. So women who were housewives during the 40s and 50s and starting into the 60s, where everything that happened was the woman's fault. Any behavioral problems, any mental challenges, anything, it was all saddled upon the women, which that makes it hard to forgive ourselves too. And that put enormous, enormous pressure on our mothers to have to be perfect. And that having to be perfect is just exhausting. That, you know, we really need to start remembering that life and the world are kind of messy. And if we go into it knowing that there's just going to be mess, then when things do get messy, we're prepared. Like, ah, excellent, this is my mess. Let's see what to do about this. So, anyway, that was my Father Jerry story, and hopefully an example of what happens when you forgive yourself. So let me express what it is that happens when somebody does something to you that's unforgivable. So the first thing that happens is that a person is dishonored. Their feelings have been hurt. You hurt me. I was crushed. I was betrayed. Disrespected, blown off, diminished, disregarded. And when that event, whatever that event is, that puts us in that space of, you know, this doesn't work. I've been dishonored. Part of what happens is our interpretation, because we all have to add meaning and interpretation to everything. And so often our filter is, what would it mean if I did that? If I took something off someone's plate, for instance, without asking, Like, I would consider that rude and shameful. So that if someone did that to me, my gut reaction would be, how could they do that? That was rude and shameful. Whereas that person, for how they were raised, the environment they were raised in, maybe had lots of siblings where, you know, first come, first serve, and survival of the fittest, and you get what you grab and go for it. So maybe for them, grabbing food off someone else's plate was normal, and it wasn't intended to be hurtful. And that was a very, very arbitrary example, but I'm trying to point to that often hurt feelings are unintentional. And that will be an important point in a bit when we talk about where to go and get healing when you've been hurt. So, so something happens, we put it through the filter, our interpretation of what does it mean or what would it mean if I did that. And basically, we're left with the experience that we weren't seen, appreciated, or we were attacked or smeared. And so when we get to those places where someone has hurt us and there's a level of doubt or mistrust, it's like, no, that person, that situation is no longer safe. And so we will distance ourselves from those people in those situations who have caused wounds. And these wounds and the decisions we make around these wounds cause insatiable needs that need to be fed, and yet no matter what we feed them, it's never enough. So, for instance, sometimes if someone's heart is broken, people may deal with that by having relationships, but never fall in love again because of the trust that was violated when their heart was broken. So the insatiable need may be to have people around, but because the originating wound wasn't healed, the relationship never progresses and develops the kind of trust and commitment that you want your relationships to have. Another thing we do when we have these insatiable needs and these black holes is that we create ways to prove something. Like, my mom was like this too, so I can see some of it is inherited, that it seemed like I spent a lot of my time proving that I was a good mom to make up for this time where I wasn't a good mom that I was still beating myself up for. And part of the challenge with doing that, part of the problem with approaching life that way, is it's not satisfying. Moving away from something painful is not the same and has a more depleting energy than moving towards something you love or desire. I'll say that again. Moving away from something, trying to avoid something, is very depleting energetically. Very different than moving towards something. The yearning, the desire, the craving, the wanting. That's coming more from human spirit. And avoiding is coming more from human animal. So, part of what happens when we do something that we consider unforgivable, that we have shame, and we do not have a good relationship to shame. I mean, shame is icky. Shame sucks. It's uncomfortable and brutal and embarrassing and, you know, forehead slapping. Oh, shit, I can't believe I did that. Cringing, awful. You know, if you're a woman, or at least if you're a woman like me, and that kind of shit wakes you up in the middle of the night, and you go, oh, man. Yeah. And the thing with shame, there's, like, it's the worst. It's the worst emotion we can feel. And shame affects our opinion of whether or not we deserve things. So an example, I had a friend whose father really hurt him, and he needed proof that he was loved. So he dated many women, but lied about it and felt terrible and ashamed about what he did. So even though he kept trying to fill that void left by his dad to prove that he was loved, all the sneaking around with many different women just put in place that he was, in fact, not lovable. So often we will come up with strategies to fill those holes, but they end up being strategies that just prove what has the hole be there in the first place. So shame. Like I say, shame sucks. It's the worst. It feels terrible, and so mostly we try to stuff it or avoid it. And it's the stuffing and avoiding that has the unforgivable things we've done as far as we're concerned, keeping those things stuck. Because we don't stop to look at what the shame is pointing to. We don't stop to see that the shame is actually like a 5-alarm fire telling us that we have violated one of our most sacred standards. And we all have them. We all have sacred standards that are so much a part of who we are that we don't even stop to consider that it's a standard that we once put in place. I'll use again my example in the forgiving myself for losing it with my kids. The shame of that before I forgave myself, it's like I had to keep that shame in place to remind me not to lose it with my kids. Like somehow keeping it in my face and always beating myself up for it seemed to be the only way I could remind myself to do everything in my power to keep my kids safe. When I forgave myself, and then as I learned about the impact of shame and how shame can actually be a resource, I started exploring that. What was my shame? My shame was I lost it with my kids. And what about that was upsetting? Oh, because they're sweet, innocent, trusting beings who are reaching out to me with their trust. And by losing it, I violated that trust. And under that, what's the trust that was violated? And the trust, the deeper truth for me is that all children are loved, all children are honored, all children are respected, all children are cared for. And being able to tune into my heart and my human spirit and know the truth of that in every cell of my body was so freeing and illuminating, because really that is who I am. I do stand for that every child who's born is a child that is wanted, and that every child who is born is a child who is nurtured and given enough food and given shelter and clothing and provided an education. Now, I don't know, listeners, if you can hear the power and the strength in those words as I say them and reclaim them. there's much more power and much more of myself available when I forgive my shortcomings, when I forgive the harm I've done and reclaim the standards which had the shame alarm go off when I violated it. Our standards are gorgeous. Our standards define who we are. Our standards are the line in the sand. Our standards are what have Elizabeth Warren get on Twitter every day and say, this shall not pass. Our standards are what have people share when someone's hurt. They know it's not okay that this person has been hurt. Oh, radio listeners, I wish we had a caller or two, but we do not. So I'll keep going. I'm trying to think if there's anything I've left out. There's another little side piece to this, I think. I'm sorry, I should not even think on the air at the same time. You know what? I don't know. Okay, one thing I can do is maybe point to some of the ways that at least me and my girlfriends try to fill those black holes that we get by either the unforgivable we've done or the unforgivable someone has done to us. And some of the ways that women fill those holes, and men can too, but mostly on this topic I've talked to women. Men, you can let me know in comments sometime whether this rings true for you. But we'll try to fill the hole with something. Food. Or shoes. You know, how many of you have girlfriends who, when they're upset, will go shopping and get new shoes or a new dress or some new makeup? And that's all to fill a hole that can't be filled. So there is something around those black holes we create and deserving. And the equation that women have for determining whether they deserve something is different than how a man determines deserves something. And again, this is for the most part. The masculine will look at all the good he's done throughout his life and subtract all the bad he's done that he hasn't forgiven himself for. And if there's a surplus, then he deserves. If there's a negative balance, if they think they've done more harm than good, then they'll believe they deserve to suffer. So the feminine is much more a moment by moment by moment by moment equation. And there are things like, my mom used to say, I swore I was never going to do this to my kids, and yet there it was that day. So two different things. But the one was, how could you do this to me? The to me is the part where, as parents, we get wounded by what our kids did because we don't hold it like that they just did it, you know, because they're kids, but that they did it to me. And it's a to me, that personal, crap that we actually do to ourselves that causes wounds to persist as well. So there are a couple of different practices that I have available. We can either set up a time to go through them, email me, and I will send you a paper copy of the process. Let's see. One is called Noble Healing, to help you heal from the wounds that others have done to you. And the other process is called Noble Forgiveness, where you really go in and claim the shame and claim the shame and claim the shame till you get to what are the standards that you violated. And reclaim those. Forgive yourself and reclaim the standards rather than being driven by the failure. Okay, I was going to say something else. Oh, yes, about noble healing. This is so profound and so powerful. So as long as you have the will to be healed from the way someone dishonored you or disrespected you or broke your heart or betrayed you, as long as you have the will to heal, you will heal in this process. And this is key. This is the most important thing. Do not get noble healing from the person who hurt you. And the reason why you don't want to get noble healing from the person who hurt you is we don't like hurting each other. It hurts us when we hurt people we love. And it's very, very challenging to take responsibility for the hurt. So often, if someone says, "You hurt my feelings when you didn't show up," or rah, 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 instead of going, "Oh, man, I'm so sorry I did that," instead we go, "I couldn't help it. There was traffic, and the kids were late, and this thing happened, and then there was, you know, an accident, and then the bus didn't come," and you know, so rather than getting the point of view and the pain from the person who, you know, their experience is their experience, but instead of honoring their experience, we're so busy trying to not claim that we've hurt somebody in that way, because it's just, it hurts to hurt people. So when you go to get noble healing from someone other than the person who hurt you, they can get your experience and provide the healing so that you can release the wound. For someone who is not going to defend the actions to you can actually provide the healing. So again, noble forgiveness to clear wounds where you've hurt others and have not forgiven yourself, and noble healing for when there are ways that people have hurt you and you want healing from that. And again, don't get noble healing from the one who hurt you. If for today's show, I hope it was worth your time. Find me at Addie's Holistic Coaching. If there's ever any kind of healing I can provide for you, let me know. I'd be happy to work with you on the air at no cost. Thank you for your time. Have a lovely week. Let's do this again. This is Yummy Wisdom Healing Happy Hour, signing off.